All right, time to buckle in, Matt. We're back. What a game yesterday, huh?
It was swell.
It's going to be a bit of a loose podcast, I think. By the way, I'm Nate.
I'm Matt.
This is It's About Time. We're here again. It is November 5th, 2018. Redskins got shellacked yesterday, 38-14, lost to Atlanta. The vaunted Redskins defense got torched for 491 yards, 154 of which were on the ground. We're going to dissect the game, but we're also, just as a reminder, this is a podcast from a DC sports fan perspective. We're not experts. We're emotional. If Josh were here this week, he sent me a text while I was watching the game yesterday. A famous line from Major League, blow it up, turn it into a parking lot. He'd be fire and brimstone. I'm not sure, Matt, are you there yet? Are you a little bit more optimistic? Or
I'm warming up.
Warming up. Got a couple beers. We'll feel all right.
Get the sleeves rolled up.
We're going to talk mostly about the Redskins this week. I said to Matt before we started, I can't really talk about the Wizards. I can only talk about one train wreck at a time. The Wizards did beat the Knicks last night, but they are...
Who doesn't?
Right. They are a rolling dumpster fire. The group chat that we're on with the DMV Sports Network guys, they're all on board with the fire Scott Brooks thing. So I'm not going to... There's a Wizards podcast out there if you want to listen to that for a Wizards breakdown. It's not a great start. I know that Josh has said that they need to trade Wall, which is a... That's a fire take, if you ask me. But
I wouldn't disagree with him on that. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, and the Caps are just, you know, they're kind of puttering along. It's still early in the season. We won't talk much about them, if at all. But it'll be mostly Redskins. We'll have a mixed bag at the end. There's a little bit of news broke this week, a little bit about Bryce, about Manny. Some news about the Masson TV crew, Ray Knight, not coming back, which is a bit of a kind of a shock. They call him Uncle Ray. Uncle Ray's been with us for over 10 years.
A long time.
Yeah. I'll be sad to see him go, but we'll talk about that at the end. But before we jump on, we'll let you guys know we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. That is the DMVSportsNetwork.com. They can be followed on Twitter at DMV_SN. They have great daily content on all DC sports. They also have a bevy of podcasts. They release one a day. We are part of that release. So they have 7 podcasts right now. Also, be sure to subscribe to our show wherever you listen, whether it's Google, iTunes, Spotify, etc. All right, let's get started. I've got some opening thoughts. And I'm just going to kind of bounce them off of you, and we'll see how you feel. I don't think the sky's falling. It feels like it. They got killed yesterday, the Redskins. And then today we find out Brandon Scherff, Sean LaValle, and Paul Richardson, are all out for the year. LaValle, I think the line played better when he was in, but he's a minimal loss compared to what Brandon Scherff is. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me say, I applaud your optimism here.
Oh, it's going to get better. Actually, I really. We talked about this beforehand, before we started. The famous Dennis Green quote, they are who we thought they were, right?
Without a doubt.
coming into this week, I said last week that their peak, if they didn't sign, or trade for a top-end wide receiver, their peak was an NFC East title and maybe one playoff win. That was their peak. My opinion still hasn't changed. They can still win the NFC East. The NFC East is not very good.
It's not. Not at all.
The Redskins' schedule sets up for it. They currently have one team with a winning record remaining on their schedule, and that's Houston. Also, Philly still has to play the Rams and the Saints. Plus, the Redskins get 2 shots at Philly. The Redskins are a game up in the NFCs. They have a game in hand against Dallas. There are a lot of things going the Redskins' way. In my opinion, they just have to ride out this shitstorm, and I'm going to call it a shitstorm because they could go to Tampa Bay and have 4 new starting offensive linemen. You know that your left tackle's out. Trent's out maybe 2 to 3 more weeks. Your left guard's out for the year. Your right guard's out for the year. And your right tackle, Morgan Moses, is playing hurt. Your backup to Trent Williams, Ty Anseki, he's playing hurt. The sky is falling in that respect. But if they can ride out the storm until Trent gets back, Chris Thompson gets back, and Jamison Crowder gets back, I think that they can still win the NFC East. That's this team's Super Bowl now, in my opinion, is the NFC East. That's it. I mean, let me ask you this. Did you watch the... I've been doing a lot of talking. I'm sorry. Did you watch the Rams-Saints game yesterday?
Yeah, I did.
They look like they're playing a different sport compared to the Redskins.
In a way, they are. I mean, right. Really, it's... You know, what we played yesterday was... I mean, it wasn't football. I mean, it wasn't enjoyable football. It wasn't good football. It wasn't even mediocre football. I don't even know what that was that they put on the field. I really don't. What was it?
It was... it was an offense that clearly had no game plan. They couldn't establish the run early. Adrian Peterson had 9 carries for 17 yards. They couldn't establish the run early. They consistently gave the ball back to Atlanta after 3 plays, 5 plays. It seemed like Atlanta's offense was on the field the entire first half. I actually broke it down. Atlanta had 4 drives in the first half. They scored 3 touchdowns on 35 plays, 304 yards in the first half. And they had 15 minutes time of possession. And let's not forget, it would have been 4 touchdowns if Calvin Ridley ran the right route. Because the interception was a gift.
It was a gift.
It wasn't good defense. That was a gift. They were marching down the field. The defense could not stop Atlanta. And the Redskins' offense was not helping. They had 1 good drive in the first half, the Redskins. It was an 11-play, 80-yard drive that ended in the touchdown to Doxson. That was to Doxson, right, in the first half? It was the fade to Doxson.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Outside of that, they had 17 plays for 59 yards. I mean, that's the story, right? This defense, they've played 2 top-flight offenses, and they've gotten killed in both. The Saints and the Falcons. But both games, the Redskins' offense could not keep the other team's offense off the field long enough to make the defense effective.
I don't get it with the defense. I mean, against New Orleans, they, you know, coming in, we thought, okay, we got a pretty good defense, and they got blown out. I mean, it was like New Orleans was playing with 15 guys. I mean, everybody was open all the time. Drew Brees could throw to whomever he would like, and the same thing yesterday. Third downs, a problem. We talked about that last week. You know, not just 3rd and 2, but 3rd and long. They were horrible. I mean, they started out 8 for 8 on 3rd downs yesterday. How in the world is that possible? That's difficult to do. And I think on 3 of those 3rd downs, they scored touchdowns.
The 40-yarder to Calvin Ridley, I believe, was on 3rd down. But that's the Falcons came out off of a bye, and their game plan was perfect. They knew how to exploit the Redskins' defense. They ran those crossing routes just like Carolina ran, But Indianapolis, remember, Andrew Luck had receivers running open in the middle of the field all day, and it was frustrating. Like, how's that possible? And essentially, the Falcons mirrored that. The difference is, because the Colts, you know, they won the game, but they didn't score at will. The difference is the Falcons have Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and Calvin Ridley. And the team complained at the end of the game that they were running pick plays all day and they didn't call them. They called them at the end of the game when it was meaningless. But still, the defense, it's the story of the year. I have it written right here. The story of the year. No significant adjustments offensively or defensively in the middle of a game to adjust to what the team's doing to you. None. The offense didn't adjust. The defense didn't adjust. Now, I know the offense was besieged by injuries, but still, a lot of yesterday, in my opinion, you have to blame the coaching staff a lot. I don't think there's any other way to look at it.
So you're saying they just weren't prepared?
No, I think that, and I think that's a common thing with Jay Gruden, is that they come out and lay duds sometimes, and he just gets outcoached.
It does. What doesn't make any sense to me is when we lose, why do we get blown out? Why does our defense, why does our top 10 defense can't stop anybody on third down? And, well, I mean, against Indianapolis, we couldn't get to the quarterback. Andrew Luck had all day long to throw. I could have thrown for 300 yards, I'm fairly certain, against the Colts or against the Redskins that day. New Orleans obviously couldn't stop anybody. I didn't expect them to stop Atlanta yesterday. I mean, they're a high-powered offense with, as you just said, three top receivers. Any of those guys would be number ones on the Redskins and for probably most of the league.
They're the best receiving core in football, especially if you throw in Austin Hooper. I mean, the Vikings might have a say in that conversation, maybe. The Rams, too, maybe. Right. But that's, if not the best, one of the top three or four receiving corps in all football.
Right. So I didn't expect the Redskins to go and hold them to under 20 points. I didn't expect that to happen at all. Again, I'm disappointed in the fact that we still can't score. And while you are optimistic about the offense maybe moving forward, even though we have a ton of injuries with the line, I think it's going to get really bad, Nate. I said last week it's not all doom and gloom. It is all doom and gloom right now. I'm telling you, this is not looking good for them.
Here's why it's not looking good for them. If I were to agree with you, I actually don't agree with you. But they went into playing Atlanta, and Atlanta had the 19th ranked rushing defense and the 30th ranked passing defense, and they were giving up the third most points a game at 30.3, and we scored. The Redskins scored 14 points yesterday. And one of the 7 points in the second half was a nice drive, but the game was pretty much decided by that point. I mean, they were down 28-7, and they scored a touchdown. Now, the defense gave them the ball back, and had they scored again, it's a ball game, and instead they didn't. But I don't think it's all doom and gloom. Mainly, and it's not because of the team. It isn't. They do still have, I still think it's a very good defense. I think Atlanta is a tough team to defend. Atlanta was coming off of a bye, and Atlanta knew how to exploit. Other teams they face aren't going to have the same weapons. Now, the team they face this week has those weapons.
They do. And I think the following week they've got Houston,
yeah,
who has those weapons.
They do.
So it's still not looking good. And they still are going to run into the same problem. You know, I heard today that Josh Norman wanted to cover Julio Jones yesterday. Mm-hmm. He did not do it very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how many yards did Julio Jones have?
It was over 100, because he had that 30 plus yard touchdown at the end.
And the pass interference on Josh Norman at the end was probably the worst play of the game.
Yeah, let me ask you this, right? We'll talk about that real quick, because Josh texted me during the game, during that moment, and he said, "That's the worst penalty I've ever seen in my life." And live, I said, "Didn't he just save a touchdown?" Because they ended up kicking a field goal. Josh said, "I don't even think he would have caught the ball."
I think it would have been very difficult. I mean, if anybody could have caught it, it probably would have been Julio Jones or DeSean Jackson. I mean, he was turning over his right shoulder, then his left shoulder back to his right, and the ball was straight ahead. I mean, it would have been a Willie Mays type of catch.
Oh, really? I thought it looked like a walk-in touchdown if he doesn't do that. I could be wrong. He got burnt very badly, and he panicked.
Yeah, I think you were wrong. But
thank you.
But no, I think that was, I mean, it was a bad decision on Josh Norman's part. But I mean, he realized he was beat, and I think he was thinking along the same lines as what you are, like, hey, he's probably going to catch this. And but at that point, you're right there at the goal line. Let him have it. You know what I mean? Let him try to get it. Because I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking, really. I mean, I don't agree with what he was thinking. I know what he was thinking. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah, that was a bad play. He did not have a good day. You talked earlier, they couldn't get to the quarterback against Indianapolis. I got to give Atlanta credit. They picked up almost every blitz the Redskins threw at them yesterday. Their running backs did a phenomenal job blocking.
They did.
And Matt Ryan looked really shifty in the pocket. He bought himself more time. Matt Ryan looked like an all-pro yesterday. And I don't know. I think Allen and Payne were pretty much non-factors yesterday. Ioannidis had another nice day. And I'm not blaming them. I mean, they're two young guys. Payne's a rookie. Allen is essentially a rookie. He only played, what, six games last year. But they were, you know, they gave up, 154 yards on the ground. But the story of the game, I mean, we're 16 minutes into this. We haven't talked about this. The Redskins were penalized. These are accepted penalties. They were penalized 10 times for 147 yards. It's the most in 40 years if you're, for a Redskins team. 147 yards. And every single one they showed on TV, it was a good call.
Yeah, well, I mean, the holding calls, yeah. And I'll talk about this one came fairly early, but I'll talk about this a little bit in a little bit. But, you know, the Morgan Moses, and he got penalized a lot yesterday. Now, the one after Sheriff got hurt and he got a 15-yarder, that was bullshit. I mean, you know, he's voicing his frustration to the ref right there. And, you know, the refs clearly missed a penalty. I mean, of course, there's no video evidence of it, right, of the Sheriff injury, but that's when Morgan Moses got that personal.
Yeah, you and I were talking about that beforehand.
Yeah.
It was all over Twitter yesterday after Sheriff got hurt that apparently, according to people that were at the game, watching it live, it was a cheap shot. He was cheap shotted, and that's why Morgan Moses was so infuriated. And now we lose a potential All-Pro for the season. You and I have both looked everywhere for the video. We can't find it. But Morgan Moses was complaining to the referee. Referee's got to have thicker skin than that. I mean, that's a bullshit penalty.
Right.
I agree with you.
And they had missed, and this is not an excuse by any means, but the refs did miss quite a few. I mean, it was very lopsided in terms of penalties and penalty yardage yesterday between these teams. Now, the Josh Doctson taunting penalty, you know, where he spun the ball after he made a catch. To me, that's not a penalty. However, you know, after he did that, I'm thinking, come on, man. You drop two balls that hit you in the chest, and you finally catch a ball along the sideline for a first down. Like, what are you doing spinning the ball? You're not ahead. You didn't score a touchdown.
They were down 28-7 at the time.
What in the world are you thinking?
And you got to look at that penalty, right? I agree with you. It's not a penalty. The only way it would be a penalty, he did point to the ball. And I think he was like, look at it. I don't know what he was. Is it pointing to it? But he wasn't really looking at the DB. He was looking at the sideline because he was on Atlanta's sideline.
Right.
Put that aside. You shouldn't even put yourself in that position.
Exactly.
You're down 28-7. That puts you in Atlanta's territory. And then the rest of that drive was they kept losing yardage on penalties, and then they ended up punting.
Well, I think that was the drive that they had 40 yards in
penalties.
It
was the two. It was that taunting. It was the 15-yard penalty on Moses, and then I think there was a holding thrown in. No, it was a bad day, man. I mean, if I have to assess blame yesterday, I think that it always starts at the top. I don't think that their effort was in question. I don't think the players weren't ready to play. I don't think the coaches installed the right game plan. They were outcoached from the jump. In the first half, I think you might have texted me this. It feels like we're down 50-0.
Yeah, I did text. Because it did.
And it was only, it was 21-7 going into the half. And should have been more. I mean, because the interception that really wasn't Matt Ryan's fault, it would have been 28-7. But then they came out of the half. Again, Jay Gruden not making, I mean, this is probably more a Minuski because he's the defensive coordinator. But they come out of the half, and you say to yourself, if you're an optimist, you say to yourself, Atlanta gets the ball. We stop Atlanta. We get a shorter field because they'll punt it to us. We score a touchdown. It's a one-possession game. Atlanta goes 8 plays, 75 yards, and a touchdown. Like it was nothing. like it was nothing. Made it 28-7, and immediately, that's pretty much it.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
I thought, just because of the podcast last week, we both, in a way, said that we thought the Redskins would win. I said that whoever scored first in the game would win the game. But I also predicted that the Redskins would score first, and that didn't happen.
So you were 50% right.
I was 50%.
I was 100% wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So that's cool.
I said the Redskins would score 28 points. I mean, Jesus.
You were way off.
I was way off. No, I was. It was bad.
But even still, there was a period in which I thought, you know what, we're still in this game. Even when it was 28-14, you know, there was still a lot of time left, and I thought that we could still put something together. And it just never happened. It never materialized. And at the end of it, we were never in the game. You know?
No, we had a chance to be in the game. The best chance that they had, aside from when they cut it to 14-7, was the Redskins cut the lead to 28-14 on a nice drive by Al. I mean, that was one of the best drives of the year, really.
Yeah.
And then the defense gave them two consecutive three and outs in the third quarter. Redskins score a touchdown. The D gives them the ball right back, three and out. And the Skins go four plays and punt. And that's when you knew game's over. Offense, they had a flash, but that was not, it's just not something that's sustainable for them. Let me ask you this. A lot of talk today. There's speculation or... Not speculation. People are suggesting, should they turn the reins over to Colt McCoy? What are your thoughts on that?
I thought that Alex Smith. This is going to sound strange. It really is. But I thought that yesterday was probably his best game.
Statistically, it was definitely his best game.
Aside from the stats, I felt like he was less. I don't know, what's the word, antsy maybe, in the pocket. He was able to get out. I think that's kind of been his problem in a way is, you know, he stands in the pocket, but his sight lines aren't that great. And that if he could just get out a little bit, you know, maybe he would throw the ball downfield a little bit rather than just checking down to, you know, well, whoever's there. But I felt like his throws were a little crisper. He was not great by any means. And I think that's going to be really the new standard for him. You know, is he a C if you were going to grade him on that scale? You know, has he been better than a C this year? Probably not.
No, he hasn't been. I mean, he has not been. He was 30 of 46 yesterday. He had 306 yards. A lot of those yards came in junk time. One touchdown, one pick. Pick wasn't really... He tried to force the ball to Vernon Davis. DB got his arm in there, popped the ball up, and it was intercepted. It was a nice play.
It was. It was a nice throw, too.
I mean, Alex, I think, had his player of the year, though, on the play where they almost sacked him. Two guys had him wrapped up, and he breaks it out and goes 22 yards and then has a suicidal moment at the end of it where he doesn't get out of bounds and gets absolutely trucked.
Complete kamikaze.
Yeah, I just don't understand that. But, it's weird. He's like a 60 to 65% passer now. Not even 65%. He's like 60 to 62. That's not who he's been in his career. Yesterday, you could in the middle of the game, he was forcing the ball to Vernon Davis a lot. I wanted to say this after I asked you this question. The idea that Colt McCoy is going to do better is a joke. Anybody who thinks that, I mean, listen, Colt McCoy is good in spurts. He's a great backup because he can come in. And he can run a couple good drives for you. He knows the offense. But the idea that that's what's holding them back is a joke. It's a joke, and I think that it's just a way for people to create conversation.
Yeah, it's not. You could put Kirk Cousins back in there, and the fact of the matter is, these receivers are still going to drop the passes, or they're not going to get open. That's been a huge thing. But yesterday, it was the penalties. I mean, a first drive, right? They got sacked. I mean, there was a sack. I mean, they were third and long, and then I think was able to complete to Mo Harris for like 9 yards, but they were still a mile away from the first down.
That was the Sean Laval drive because it's the only drive he played.
Right.
He got bulldozed. No, he was a holding penalty, and then he got bulldozed, and that's when he blew his knee out.
Right.
By the way, real quick tangent. That was a sad scene, him being pushed down the sideline in a wheelchair.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, where's the cart? Right. I'm like, Jesus. That was horrible, man. I'm like, he knew it. You could see it on his face. He was kind of covering it with a towel, but yeah, that was. I mean,
it looked like he was going to the nursing home rather than a, you know, the X-ray.
Right. Room. I mean, that looked really rough. But also, I mean, their second drive was derailed. I think it was the second drive was derailed by the two Dachshund drops. There, because they're.
I mean, hit him in the chest.
They hit him in the chest. I mean, those are good balls by Alex Smith. He doesn't have weapons. He doesn't have weapons. Yesterday, he played without a 3/5 of his offensive line. He had Jerron Christian in there, who, I mean, is a rookie. I'm not crapping on the guy. He's not ready to be out there.
No.
I mean, Charles Davis on the broadcast talked about it multiple times. I mean, he got trucked a couple of times. I mean, he just was on his heels. I think he said that he's got his center of gravity's high, whatever. But the idea that Alex Smith, by replacing him, the team, that it's a bullshit notion, in my opinion. I mean, he did have one of his better days yesterday. A lot of the yardage was in junk time, but I think he was more accurate yesterday. But my point I was trying to get to is he still strikes me as a guy, and it's probably a combination of having great receivers, but he strikes me as a guy who's not fully confident in the offense yet. And I think the assumption going into the season was that he understood it and that he was, you know, and I think that was probably too much of an assumption, and he needs to be given a little bit more time to learn the offense, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, he's never really looked comfortable back there, but at the same time, he can't be confident in any of those receivers. I mean, you know, and now, no Paul Richardson. Done for the year, so you've got maybe Jamison Crowder plays this week. Maybe. Trey Quinn's not playing. He's not coming back. Cam Sims done for the year. So you've got Josh Doxson, who drops half the passes that's thrown to him, with the exception of last week, but whatever. Jordan Reed was involved yesterday.
Yeah, four Davis, catches for 34 yards.
Vernon Davis was the go-to guy.
He tried to force a lot of balls of Vernon Davis. Vernon Davis had 5 catches for 62. I mean, Davis is amazing. Yep. For his age, he's amazing. Doxson on 6 targets was 3 for 31. He had those 2 big drops. He did have a touchdown. It was a nice catch on the fade for a touchdown. I was screaming fade at my TV because right. Josh has been calling that.
Maurice Harris, he's the guy that's got to, I mean, just throw it to him because he's going to catch the ball. He's the guy that gets open. As far as I'm concerned, Josh Doxson, he shouldn't even play.
Mo Harris was 10 for 124 yesterday. 10 catches, 124 yards. Grant Paulson, I saw he was on Twitter today. He said that he thinks when Jamison Crowder comes back that Mo Harris should take most of the snaps on the outside away from Doxson. I mean, I can't disagree with that. I think Mo Harris right now, weird thing to say, probably your best wide receiver.
He is. He's you know what? He's the most reliable.
He is. No, he's definitely the most reliable. He's got good hands. He's got good speed. They use him as a decoy a lot on the end of rounds. Sometimes they give it to him, not very often, but they fake it like they're going to do it. I think he could be really useful in the RPOs if they lined him up in the slot. I don't know, man. This was a point I wanted to get to. This is, and I said this when I did the podcast by myself. This second half of the season, they've played 8 games, they're 5-3. It might be Jay Gruden's final exam. He's supposed to be an offensive guru. He's going to have to find a way to make this work. He has to. The Redskins have been too mediocre under Jay Gruden. They've had talent at times. I mean, their offensive talent is a little questionable now, but he needs to find a way to make it work. And they have an above-average defense. He needs to find a way to make it work. If he can't, I mean, if they putter out again like they did last year, it's probably time for Jay to go. I mean, I don't want to get that drastic yet, but They have a good chance this year to win the NFC East.
They do. I think the problem is they, I don't want to say they peaked at the wrong time, but I mean, I can't imagine how they're going to get any better. I mean, last week, after we did the podcast, they made a trade for HaHa Clinton Dix. In hindsight, you know, and we even talked about it that night, you know, will the Redskins make a move? We both agreed yes. We'll probably get a receiver. Mm-hmm. And there were some receivers that were out there, and then they just started dropping like flies to other teams.
Well, Demaryius Thomas, they hardly got anything for him. Golden Tate, same thing. I think I think the Philly gave up a fourth rounder. They could have gotten either one. They could have gotten DeSean Jackson. Well, I don't know if he wanted out. I don't know if Tampa was ready to trade him, but they could have. It was at least out there that he might have been available.
Right. Sure. So we didn't pick up the position that we thought we were going to, that we have the most need for. You know, we were kind of all in on the defense, and now it's like, geez, okay, Clinton Dix made a couple of tackles yesterday. It's a shame that they were 25 yards downfield.
Yeah, he had seven tackles. He played 71% of the snaps. Monte Nicholson only played 32%. So obviously he took most of the snaps that Nicholson would have taken. I think that they made that deal thinking about Golden Tate, thinking about Amari Cooper, and maybe in their fantasy thinking about, we got to cover the three receivers for the Rams. Yeah, right. We got to cover the receiving core from the Saints. I was talking to my dad earlier today, and we said this earlier, the Redskins are not in the same league as those two teams. They're not even really in the same league as the Minnesota Vikings. They are, but they can still, in my opinion, they can still win the division because of what their schedule is and because the division is not very good. Is that great? I mean, it'll be fun to watch, hopefully. But I don't disagree. It's hard to imagine the offense getting better, and they're not good right now.
No, well, where do you think they are? I mean, if you look at this team, and I'm asking you, or somebody else asked you, you know, who do you think this team is? Where do they stand right now compared to the rest of the league?
Compared to the rest of the NFC? I think they're right around maybe the 7th or 8th. They're in the middle. Their defense is good enough to win them a game from time to time.
So you're telling me that you think they're a top 10 football team?
No.
Okay.
No. 7 or 8 in the NFC, not in the NFL.
Oh, okay.
No. I think they're a middle-of-the-road team.
Okay.
No. I think I could probably name 7 to 8 teams in the NFC that they're better than. They're certainly better than the Giants. They're better than the Cardinals, the 49ers. I think they're better than the Seahawks. That's four teams right there. We're going to find out this week if they're better than Tampa. They've beaten Carolina. They've beaten Green Bay.
Good wins.
I think they're better than Detroit. But when it comes down to it, that's in the NFC. In the AFC, it's a totally different story. But when it comes down to it, any thought, I don't know if anybody thought that they might have been an NFC championship caliber team that could make the Super Bowl. They're not. They just aren't. Unless this defense turns into the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens, a team that can hold teams to under 10 points a game, they're not that team. They just aren't. Or if Alex Smith, for some reason, turns into Tom Brady in this offense, they're not. They're just not that team.
When you look at the rest of their schedule, can you confidently say we're probably going to beat this team?
No. I mean, we're going to talk about Tampa in a few minutes. After the Giants game, Tampa game looked like a win. I don't know now. Then they play Houston. I don't know. Then they play Dallas. I don't know. Then they play Philly. I really don't know.
Right.
But they're also not teams where you go, they're definitely going to lose. So in 2 weeks, let's say it's 2 weeks. They get lucky. Trent can come back in 2 weeks. Chris Thompson can come back in 2 weeks, even though he's having rib issues. Jamison Crowder's back in 2 weeks. Then you got a makeshift offensive line, but you got your two anchors on the outside. You've got Morgan Moses. You've got Trent Williams. You still have your starting center. You're trying to patchwork it with your guards. Tony Bergstrom will definitely be one of the starters. I think the other one, was it Casey Dunn? They said it'll probably be the other one. Maybe they gel. I don't know. But that's what this team is right now. They're an I don't know. They're an I don't know. That's what they are. Well, what do you think? Where would you put them?
I would put them at an average. I think they're average. Yeah. I don't have any confidence in them to, I mean, they could lose the rest of the games and I wouldn't be shocked. They could go 5-3 again and I'd probably be pleasantly surprised. You know, for the remaining games that they have, I mean. But I can't look at the schedule and say, you know what, we should crush this team, because we haven't crushed the team yet. I mean, we haven't outscored anybody by 21 points. I mean, that's just not happening. We're not going to do that. But our defense hasn't shown the ability yet against good teams to be able to stop them. So we're going to play good teams down the road. And when you get to the playoffs, they're all good teams. I just don't have the confidence. And I really think we still have to play Philly twice. You don't think Philly's going to figure it out? I mean, they're the Super Bowl champs, right? They should probably figure it out. They've got a better receiving core than what we do. They've got a better quarterback. They've got an offensive line that's pretty good as well. And they've got some issues on defense.
If Philly had the identical schedule to the Redskins remaining, they're a game back right now, plus they have two games against the Redskins, then no, I would say that the Phillies certainly should be the favorite. But Philly's got two games against the two best teams in the NFC, and they're not in the same class as the Rams or the Saints. The Saints look like juggernauts.
Yeah.
The Redskins' schedule is filled with I don't knows. Not just them, but the teams they're playing. Jacksonville. Do we know anything about Jacksonville? Are they the defense from last year that was like a world beater? Or are they this mediocre, I don't know. Tennessee. What is Tennessee? They're probably not very good. We're going to find out tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could look right now.
Yeah, I was saying, they're playing Dallas right now. But they're also, and I don't know. Tampa Bay. They keep switching back and forth between quarterbacks. They're an I don't know. The only one that might not be an I don't know is Houston, because Houston's starting to figure it out. They've got a good defense. Deshaun Watson is good. But that's the, every week we're going to go in, Redskins have a chance. I don't know. That's what it's going to be. That's all it's going to be.
You're right. I'm
Is it stupid to look at it that way?
But no, it's not stupid to look at it. But I look at it like I'm scared to play anybody right now. Because I just don't feel like we can score enough to win. And in a league where you need to score, I mean, where you need to score a lot of points. I mean, that's the new standard for the NFL, is, you know, scoring 30 points a game. That's what they want. That's what good teams do. And we can, I mean, we finally scored a third quarter touchdown since, what, week 12 of last year. That's, come on.
Goes back to the a point that I've hammered way too many times, but...
Well, hammer it again.
Jay Gruden doesn't make second-half adjustments.
Well, that's true.
He doesn't. Team does not come out of halftime ready to play. They just don't. They come out flat. They give up long drives defensively. They don't score in the third quarter. I mean, prior to... It wasn't last week. The two games prior to the Giants game, Dallas and Carolina, they scored a total of 12 points on offense in the second half. Four field goals. But they did have a defensive touchdown against Dallas in the second half. So we clearly overreacted last week to the defense's dominance of the Giants. We clearly overreacted to that. The Giants are very, very bad. But they have names. They have Saquon Barkley. They have OBJ. And they even have Eli Manning, who's won two Super Bowls. So we're like, damn, man, we figured them out. Are we overreacting now because one of the best offenses in football torched the Redskins defense and the Redskins offense did nothing to help them? And the reason I'll ask that is that the Rams on paper are supposed to have a very good offense and they gave up 45 points to the Saints yesterday. I'm sorry, defense. Very good defense. Yeah. With Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald in the middle, and they gave up 45 points yesterday.
Yeah, but the Rams haven't – their defense hasn't played well all year.
No, they haven't.
But they finally lost their first game. You know, our defense has played well in all but, we'll say, two games. I mean, the Colts, they were not – they weren't atrocious. It was just, you know
– they didn't give up 30 points. What did they give up, like 20?
21, I think.
21, right? Yeah.
But, again, our defense isn't – we did score a touchdown against Dallas. But it's not like the defense is really putting the offense in a position to – I mean, with the Redskins offense, they almost need to start on the opponent's side of the field in order to have a chance because they just haven't been able to put together drives all season long. We can't throw the ball more than 4 or 5 yards at a time. We discussed that last week. And when we get down, we're not going to run the ball, which has been our most effective thing. So we either need to start running the ball, and last night was, we had no shot of running the ball. We were down too much. You can't run it. You got to pass it.
Plus, you're playing with a makeshift offensive line. AP didn't have much running room to begin with. They tried to feed him the ball on a couple screen passes, which he looked good doing.
I think Alex Smith is really going to have to – I mean, he's going to have to throw the ball 40 times a game. I really think that's what's going to have to happen.
He did start taking shots in the second half yesterday. He did start – he did.
Well, what have you got to lose at that point?
Right.
You know, I mean, Adrian Peterson, he was – I mean, forgotten about. I mean, it was to a point where Samaje Perine got in there. It's like, oh.
Perine and Bibbs had a lot of carries. Well, not a lot, but they had carries in the second half. I think Jay Gruden looked at it like, hey, man, we're just going to take AP out. We're going to save the wear and tear on him. There's sure. No reason. Before we talk about Tampa, I do want to say we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. They are looking for people to join their writing staff. So if you're interested at all in joining their writing staff, writing some articles about DC sports, send a direct message to @DMV_SN on Twitter. We'll let you know they do have a bunch of podcasts that they release, one of which that I like to listen to is Fantasy Fever. Looks like I'm going to go 2-0 this week. So Marcus Hemingway helping me out again, Fantasy Fever. But again, DMVSportsNetwork.com and again on Twitter @DMV_SN. Let's talk about Tampa real quick.
Well, can I ask you real quick before talk about Tampa? Did you turn over the reins to Marcus for your fantasy team?
Is that
what happened?
Yeah, I think I did. I got a trade offer this week that I accepted, and I didn't think about it. It didn't hurt me in our league, but they offered me, Doug Martin, the running back for the Raiders, for, I can't say the guy's last name, the tight end for the Browns, Njoku, I think. And I accepted it, but the Raiders played on Thursday night, so Doug Martin wasn't available until Friday. So, and then I had Chris Thompson in my starting lineup. Luckily, I was like fishing for people. As soon as he was pronounced out, I was like fishing for people, and I think I landed on, I can't even remember who I landed on, but I ended up winning, fortunately, but I didn't score that many points. The guy I played against did not have a very good... He had Kirk Cousins, who did not have a good day statistically, even though they won.
Well, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
That's right. So let's talk about Tampa real quick. They play Tampa this week. They travel to Tampa Bay. Tampa, this stat might surprise you. They have the number one rated passing offense in all football. They average 356.6 yards per game in the air. But they're 30th in running. They only run 90 yards a game. But they're averaging, as a team, almost 450 yards a game on offense. Fitzmagic can move the football.
He can. Well, he throws it a lot, too.
He does. But last week they played Atlanta. Let me look at my sheet real quick. Going into the game, they were 30th in pass defense at 306 yards a game. Tampa is now 30th in pass defense, because I'm assuming that Atlanta's rating went down a little bit because of, you know, playing us. So they're 30th at 307 yards a game, and they're also 15th in rushing at 107 yards a game. So they're giving up 418 yards total of offense. So last week I said the Redskins should be able to move the ball, and they didn't. Will they have any chance to move the ball this week?
You know, I told myself last week, Nate, that I wanted to be optimistic about this team, you know, and the moment that I did that, you know, they come out and they play like they did. So I think it is going to be another very similar game to what we played yesterday. I think we're going to have trouble with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, the guy can throw the ball. He's looked pretty good on many games. I mean, he's had some bad games. I mean, obviously, he got benched in favor of Jameis, but, you know, I mean, he's got some speedy receivers. You know, we've got a problem with Josh Norman. I mean, fast guys, he doesn't cover well. You know, he's man-to-man, forget about it. He's not the guy. You know, hopefully Dunbar's all right. You know, hopefully he's back.
He looked good this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think he re-aggravated the hamstring, though, if I recall. But I think it's going to be a very similar game. If we can't get out and establish the run early, there's no evidence that we can be effective throwing the ball.
The teams that the Redskins have struggled against have had top-flight wide receivers. The Saints, clearly. Atlanta, clearly. Indy, you could even throw T.Y. Hilton into it. This does not match up well for the Redskins defense. It just doesn't. But again, if that front seven can generate pressure, it changes everything. Atlanta picked up the blitz. If Tampa can't pick up the blitz, then Fitzmagic, he's not really mobile. That's, to me, the key to success is going to be they're going to have to put pressure on Fitzpatrick and make him make quick decisions. Because if you're asking the defense to cover for 5, 6, 7 seconds, they can't do it. They just can't.
No, but, you know, what worries me, too, is, I mean, what did Atlanta have yesterday rushing? 154 yards rushing. That's 6.4 yards per rushing attempt yesterday. How do you explain that?
What's funny is they were talking about that during the game. Atlanta has the most success of an offense on play action, and they have no threat of a run game. I don't think the Redskins thought they were going to run a football, and when they ended up handing it off, I think they got caught with their pants down. I think they were in pass defenses most of the time, and they got caught with their pants. I think collectively the Redskins coaching staff got out-coached yesterday. I think Minuski got out-coached. I think certainly Jay Gruden got out-coached. And the Falcons, I mean, they did have an extra week to prepare for it. They just look like the better prepared. They're clearly the better team, but the better prepared team yesterday. Thing is with Jay Gruden, usually when they get an embarrassing loss, the team does come back like gangbusters. I did want to look that up, and I didn't. But this year, clearly after the Saints game, they came back and they won a surprising game against Carolina. Can they repeat that? Do you think they can repeat that?
Sure.
I don't know. That's what this podcast is going to be called. It's going to be called I Don't Know.
Yeah. Again, I don't have – I mean, this is almost week to week for me with them. You know, it's like, what have you done for me lately? Do I have confidence going into this week? No, not really. I mean, and by that, I mean hardly at all. I hate to be pessimistic about the team that I like. It's just, show me that you can score. I'm confident in our defense enough to think that they'll keep us in a game so long as we can keep some drives going. But show me that you can play 60 minutes worth of football, and then I'll think differently. But until they do that, I'm thinking that were probably going to be the underdogs for the rest of the... I mean, I can't imagine they're going to be favored in any of these upcoming games.
No, they opened against Tampa. They're a 2.5-point underdog, which is about right for what they think are two evenly matched teams, because usually you get 3 points for being at home. Actually, matter of fact, they probably think the Redskins are a 0.5 point better than Tampa, which on a neutral field, which doesn't make much sense.
Well, we'll see where that line moves.
It'll probably move to Tampa. Fitzpatrick is very popular. They made a run at it yesterday against Carolina, although Carolina eventually distanced themselves, won by 2 touchdowns over Tampa. I don't think Tampa's a great football team, but they certainly have an explosive offense. And the Redskins haven't handled explosive offense as well this year. They've played 3 top 15 offenses, and they've lost all 3 games. Indy, surprisingly, is a top 15 offense. They've lost all 3 games. So, I don't know. If I had to predict, if I had to put money on it, I would not bet on the Redskins winning. They're just too decimated offensively. But if the defense that played the Giants shows up and they can hold Tampa to 17 points, then they can win. And if I think the only way that they win, yeah, let me say this. I think the only way that they win is if Alex Smith comes out like he did against Green Bay, throwing. Back those safeties up. Back the linebackers a few yards off the line of scrimmage, and then you just heavily feed AP the ball. Jump out to maybe a 10-point lead and then just ride AP all the way to the finish line and hope that your defense can hold on for dear life. That's the only way they win the football game, in my opinion, because they're not going to win if it's a shootout. They're clearly not going to win if it's a shootout. And if Tampa jumps out to a lead, this team cannot come back. They just can't. They're not built that way.
It's a shame. You know, we had this problem last year. I mean, Kirk Cousins didn't have guys to throw to. We didn't have a running game. And our defense was about the worst in the NFL.
And then the offensive line collectively all got hurt.
Right. However, didn't you feel like you always had a chance with Kirk Cousins back there? I just don't feel the same way now.
I agree. Jay's got a good offense. Maybe it clicks with Alex Smith. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. That's my final thought on the Redskins. I don't know. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got a mixed bag. We'll just kind of bullshit about baseball, see how we feel about Ray Knight. So we'll take a quick break. You guys won't know that we're gone because we're going to jump right back in, but we'll take a quick break, and we'll see you guys in a bit. All right, we're back from our having a cold beer hiatus. We've got a mixed bag, but before we jump into the mixed bag, Matt, you had a point that you wanted to touch on with the Redskins, and we talked about the Redskins for nearly 53 minutes, but I actually found the point very interesting, so I'd like to hear what you it was about Josh Doctson.
It was. You know, obviously, he was a number one draft pick a couple years ago, hurt his rookie season. Last year came out and was irrelevant. This year, finally caught his first touchdown pass yesterday on the fade. Finally the fade.
Finally the fade after, what, 3 years of waiting for it.
Yeah. It was worth it, wasn't it? It wasn't. It wasn't worth it. You know, at some point, and it's probably going to be sooner than later, you're going to say, okay, is this guy, I mean, is he worth putting in the lineup anymore? My thoughts on it are, you know, for every, you know, really nice catch he has, he drops to, or he just doesn't separate enough to make an impact for this team. Clearly, he's not a number one receiver. In hindsight, he was a bad first-round draft pick. I don't think anybody is at this point would dispute that. But at what point do you say enough's enough? Because the reality is, does he start anywhere else?
Um, I don't know. I mean, there are plenty of teams that have wide receiver needs. So I'm sure that I'm sure that if the Redskins, let's say they cut bait at the end of this year, another team will give him a chance. I mean, the Redskins gave up essentially on Aldrick Robinson, and he's doing fine in Chicago. Is it Chicago? Or no, Minnesota. Wherever Aldrick Robinson is, he's doing fine. I think it's Chicago. No, Allen Robinson's in Chicago.
Allen Robinson, Chicago.
Aldrick Robinson is with the Vikings, with Kirk Cousins. Anyway, that has nothing to do with it. It was a point that actually, you know, we talked about briefly earlier. Grant Paulson said when Crowder comes back and he takes over in the slot and Mo Harris has to move to the outside, that he should start taking snaps away from Doxson. I don't disagree with that. Doxson showed you yesterday's game was the perfect, it was the microcosm of his career. He showed you flashes of why he was a number one draft pick. Was he like 18th overall? And then he showed you why he's been so maddening. The only thing it was missing from yesterday was an injury. And then it would have been the perfect kind of three things for him. It would have been, you know, injury, flashy play, and drops. That's his career.
Right.
So I think you give him to the end of the season just because you're so depleted wide receiver-wise. But they're going to have to give him a hard look in the offseason as to whether they get rid of him or not, in my opinion. What do you think?
Cut him. Cut him now.
Really?
They can't, obviously. They can't. They need receivers so badly. You know, just I'm so disappointed. You know, you hate for your first-round draft pick to be a dud. I mean, and he's been a dud. There were... Even last week, I said, okay, he's starting to look a little bit better because he caught all five targets. But then those drops yesterday, I mean, and then the taunting penalty just set me over the top. You know, I just can't stand it. It just annoys me anyway, regardless if it's a receiver or a guy that makes a sack on a play and their team is down 20 points. And it's like, come on, what are you celebrating for? I mean, really, what is the point? I just don't get it. I don't like that. It annoys me. And, you know, the fact that he just spun the ball after catching a first down pass that was not a difficult pass by any means. And if I'm the Falcons yesterday, I'm laughing at them. I mean, really, don't you think they were probably laughing at that guy?
Oh, I'm sure they were, because they were up 28-7. And, yeah, no, they definitely were. Yeah. I think you give them to the end of the season because you have a depleted wide receiver core, but...
I hope that he proves me wrong. I hope that he turns around and he... is just lights out the rest of the season.
He's got the physical gifts. I don't know what you blame the inability to create separation on. I don't know if that's not running great routes. I don't know if dropping the ball is a lack of focus or if it's just an issue that he has. But he's clearly been a dud so far. And to your point, he may have fantastic catches. He may have flashes. But if your quarterback can't trust you to hold on to the ball, what good are you? You can't be trusted on a big third down. Your quarterback's essentially eliminating you from the route tree because he's like, I can't throw it to him. There's a 50-50 chance he's going to drop it even if I put it in his hands. Then you shouldn't keep running him out there.
Right.
If Alex has no confidence in him, like Kirk lost confidence in him last year, then you shouldn't keep running him out there. And I think that's the point you're making.
That is the point. Okay, enough about him.
All right, let's go to baseball. We'll start with the Ray Knight thing, just because I found it interesting.
Yeah.
This is a DC sports-centered podcast. I am a gigantic Nats fan. I watch just about every game on Masson. Uncle Ray, as we call him, has been a staple for more than 10 years, pre-game, post-game. Sometimes he's in the booth. And he wasn't fired. His contract was not renewed for 2019. For those of you that don't know the story, if you want to go all the way back to last offseason, Ray Knight was arrested living in Northern Virginia. He was arrested for assault. He beat up a younger man. The details of the situation never fully came out, like what the younger man was doing at his house late at night, all that stuff. Charges were eventually dropped. He was never really disciplined by Masson. But then in September, the middle of September, Nats were out of the playoff race. Ray Knight mysteriously, without explanation, disappeared from the Masson broadcast, from the pre and post-game stuff. There were rumors that he had some sort of altercation with somebody that works for Masson. Anyway, that came out that he did have a verbal altercation with a member of the production staff. He's not coming back. To me, as a Nats fan, listen, as an Orioles fan, you've had Tom Davis for how long?
I mean, since home team sports.
Right. I mean, the guy is, he's a legend, a local legend. Ray Knight is not that. I mean, he is that to Nationals fans, but he's, Ray Knight's more known for being a Met.
Right.
Being the manager of the Reds. But this one's, it's tough. I really, really like Ray Knight. He wore his emotions on his sleeve. He was certainly a hometown guy. He always rooted for the Nats. He was always very passionate. I'm going to miss him, man. I it's a bummer. It's going to be, I'd be curious to see who they replace him with. Because they've pretty much had the same, it's kind of weird. They've had pretty much the same crew pretty much since they went to Nats Park. The only difference was they had Rob Dibble as their color guy until he talked trash about Steven Strasburg. But since pretty much 2010, it's been FP and Bob. It's been Johnny Holiday and Ray Knight doing the pre and post. And then Dan Kokos came on like 5-6 years ago. It's nice having that crew. You guys have Jim Palmer, Mike Bordick, and Rick Dempsey, and
Gary Thorne.
Gary Thorne is probably the best voice in baseball. I mean, I love that guy's voice. But it's just, it's tough. I mean, the best, Rick, it'd be like if you guys lost Rick Dempsey. Although Dempsey played for the Orioles, so it's a little different.
Yeah, I mean, I like Rick Dempsey. He talks a lot. He's got a lot of run-on sentences. But, I mean, you just love the guy because, hey, he was World Series MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so it's tough for me as a Nats fan, but I just wanted to touch on that quickly because that was some big news this year.
I guess, you know, the person that we all would want to pick up the slack is FP Santangelo, of course, right? I mean, he's...
Fighting Hydrant,
yeah.
Fighting
Hydrant, yeah. I mean, who better?
Who better? He should just do everything.
He should.
You know, since Josh isn't here, I'm going to say it. I really like the Nats broadcast booth. They're my hometown guys. I watch them night in and night out. I've got no problem with FP, but I can also see why people get annoyed by him. But Josh is always like, he thinks that FP talks about the glory days, thinking that he's great. No, FP is very self-deprecating. He talks about how he was a 200 hitter, but he talks about being on a team with Barry Bonds, which I find interesting. Being on a team playing behind Pedro Martinez when they were with the Expos, I find that interesting. I have no problem with FP, but again, I can see why people do.
I love him. I think the world of him.
Sure you do. Listen, man, that's what Josh always says too, and I'm sure you would probably agree with this. The Orioles broadcast is very, very good. Gary Thorne's amazing, and then if you have Jim Palmer or Mike Bordick, you can't go wrong.
Well, amazing is not the word I would probably use to describe Gary Thorne. Because there are times when I don't think he's actually watching the game. You know, I mean, you know, a fastball right down the middle of the plate that's 95 miles an hour, and he'll say, off-speed pitch, or, you know, he calls out some obscure, you know, pitches and whatnot. But he's entertaining, to say the least. I swear he drinks during the broadcast.
I love his voice. I love his accent.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the way he pronounces, like, when he pronounces the Jeff Samardzija, you know, Samardzija, it's just, there's something about him. Like, because most guys, when they go into broadcasting, they get rid of whatever region they're from, that kind of accent or nomenclature. They get rid of it.
Yeah.
He's, like, full, he's like Jerry Remy with the Red Sox, man. He's, like, full into it. I love it.
Yeah, I like him. I and having Jim Palmer sitting next to him, I mean, Jim Palmer's...
Do you get better than Jim Palmer? I don't think you do.
I don't think so.
No.
You know, he really... I think Jim Palmer at times can oversimplify things, but at the end of the day, he's very knowledgeable about baseball. Right. And Mike Bordick, you know Mike Bordick? I like Mike Bordick. They've had Ben McDonald in there as well from time to time. And actually, I really like listening to Ben McDonald, but you got to have something to listen to because watching the Orioles isn't fun.
And it won't be for a few years.
No, it won't.
And then I guess the other thing about baseball is there's kind of a Bryson Manny update. I saw today, not today, it was yesterday, an article came out that said, and this surprised you when I told you about this, that a couple teams anonymously said that they would not be in the sweepstakes for Manny specifically because of his antics in the playoffs. Does that surprise you?
I call bullshit.
Yeah,
I mean, I do. you could say that about a lot of people. I mean, you are going to pass on Manny Machado because of that. I mean, listen, not what he did wasn't horrific. You know,
it was stupid.
Yeah, but
especially in the biggest stage of your career, it was stupid. It's hard to justify it. You can't justify it.
You can't. But still. You know, he's a guy that can go out and win you a game.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So how do you pass on that? You can't. You don't. You know, Pedro Martinez did a lot of stupid things while he was pitching. Did anybody want to pass on him?
No, the most memorable moment I can remember about him was grabbing Don Zimmer by the head and chucking him to the ground.
Right.
I watched that game live in Boston. That was it was shocking. And you know, Don Zimmer, after that game, he was the one in tears that he felt like, because he charged Pedro.
Yeah. I would have too.
Yeah.
If I were him.
No. And it was tough to watch Don Zimmer. He was an older guy at the time.
Yeah.
He was emotional. And that was, yeah. And Pedro liked to go up and in. He'd hit guys. And I think you could say that they're comparable talents. I mean, Pedro's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Manny's a top 5-6 player in baseball right now, easily. One of the best defenders of a generation. So I think it could be people being coy, trying to drive down the market.
Sure. I think that's what it is.
Because it also came out today, or yesterday, whenever it was, that the Yankees are actually more focused on pitching than they are. And Manny's like kind of, well, we'll see where he lands. I can't imagine that's the case. I just can't. I know that their infield is stacked. You know, they got Andujar, Gleyber Torres, they've got Didi. They're doing fine infield-wise, but if you can add Manny Machado, put him at third, and then, trade Andujar or do something, you know. I can't see them not being in on Manny.
Yeah, and I even heard today that they are considering re-signing CeCe.
Yeah, they re-signed Brett Gardner. Wow. Lisa, I think they did. Because that was the thing that where they said that's really the evidence that they're not in on Bryce Harper is that they re-signed Brett Gardner. I thought that they re-signed him.
Well, I mean, the Yankees are they're only a piece or two away from a World Series contender. I mean, pitching. You know, Red Sox had the pitching this year. And their lineup was stacked. But the Yankees are right there. They won over 100 games, right?
I mean, you could argue if you wanted to that the Yankees offense is actually better than the Red Sox offense. I mean, Gary Sanchez had a horrible year. If he has a comeback season, their offense is better than the Red Sox offense.
Well, I mean, it's got that potential, but just because of their home run hitters, but they do strike out a lot.
They do.
You know, Judge and Stanton. Sanchez,
oh my God. He had such a horrible... I mean, he was going into the season, was considered... There was conversation about him being the best catcher in baseball. I mean, throw defensive metrics out of it because he's not great defensively, but, I mean, Buster Posey's the best catcher in baseball. JT Realmuto is in the conversation. Gary Sanchez fell off that list because of he was so terrible offensively. But if he has a comeback, hits 35 homers, bats 250 instead of 200 or whatever he was at, yeah, they're a juggernaut offensively.
Yeah.
And then could they add Manny Machado to that? But you're right. Patrick Corbin is certainly at the top of their radar pitching-wise. I think bringing CC back is a smart idea if he wants to pitch again. Not just for what he does on the field, but because he's a veteran, he's a leader. I mean, at best, he's going to give you 5 innings a game.
You think they'll re-sign Sonny Gray?
No, I think they want out of that. Yeah, I don't think so. I think Sonny Gray will benefit from a new location because he was great in Oakland. I don't think he could handle pitching for the Yankees.
Some people can't.
It's also a tough ballpark to pitch in. It's an offensive-heavy ballpark. But also, I think he's just better with a mid-market. I actually wouldn't mind if the Nats gave him a flyer, Sonny Gray. Because if he bounces back... Speaking of the Nats, they signed Trevor Rosenthal this week. Like a really early, the first free agent signing there was. He's coming off of Tommy John surgery, did not pitch last year. They gave him, I think, $7 million for 1 year. The guy went healthy, throws over 100 miles an hour. He was a pretty good closer for the Cardinals. He says he feels great. Felt like he could have come back last July after the All-Star break, but his doctor's like, no, give it a full offseason.
And I guess since we did the last podcast, Doolittle, right?
Yeah, they picked up Doolittle's option. That was like a no-brainer. It was like $6 million or something like that. But they're building. They're already building their team. I'd love to see them go and get or to bring back Greg Holland. I don't know how much he'll be, but I'd like to see them do that because then you're really building up a good back end of the bullpen. What they thought they had last year with the law firm of Madsen, Kinsler, and Doolittle, but they don't. They need to rebuild that. So, the other thing was about Bryce. The Yankees pretty much say they're out. But also, the Cubs, they picked up Cole Hamels' option this week. It was like $20 million. But they were hemming and hawing about it because of the cost. So if they're hemming and hawing about that, I can't imagine that they're going to be in on the Bryce sweepstakes. Adding $30 million a year to their payroll when they still have Baez, Rizzo, and Bryant that they need to eventually lock in long term. So, I mean, I've said this on multiple podcasts. I don't know how many real suitors Bryce Harper has. Alex Anthopoulos with the Braves this week came out and said, signing a player like that could really wreak havoc on our salary situation, on our payroll situation. So, who are the teams in your mind? Where's the most aside from the Nationals? You said last week you couldn't imagine anywhere else, but
it has not changed since last week.
Yeah, it's only been a week.
he's going to be a Nationals player. He will.
You heard it here first. Do you think there's any chance he signs a 1 year deal, a show me deal, whether it's here or somewhere else?
I don't think so. You know, what happens if he bats 220 again or in that general vicinity of average? You know, aside from, I mean, he had a good second half, but, I mean, his first half, right? I mean,
no, 100%. No, he had a great second half that got him back up to, 247, I think.
I don't know that he can afford to do that again on a one-year deal because then it's really going to shoot him in the foot.
But if the reports are true that he's expecting, or Boris is expecting, for the conversation to start at 10 for 350, no, I can't imagine anybody paying him that. I just can't. It's too much money. It just is. Even for a personality like him, a guy that puts butts in the seats, it's just too much money.
Well, I don't believe anything Scott Boris says. Not a word. You know, he's great at what he does.
Yeah, he serves his clients' interests very well.
I mean, not as well last year. He did not have a great...
Jason Worth even came out and complained about it. Jason Worth's side of the story was that there were offers from teams and Boris had waited out, and then they waited it out and nobody...
Right.
Boris said that Worth misremembered that situation or whatever he said.
But no, I think Bryce is going to sign a long-term deal with somebody, but most likely the Nationals.
The only other team I can think of, if the Braves are out, maybe the Phillies and maybe the Giants. I don't know if Bryce wants to go to the Giants, unless it's really all about the money, because the Giants are not close to contending. They've got a lot of dead money on their payroll with a lot of older guys. Their pitching staff needs to be rebuilt. I mean, Johnny Cueto got hurt last year. Samardzija hasn't been what they thought he'd be. You're really just dealing with Bumgarner and him, and you know Hunter Pence is gone now. I mean, they're not a player away. Unless the Dodgers are willing to spend a boatload of money, or there's a mystery team like with when Seattle came and got Robinson Cano, I think you're probably right. I think the only way the Nationals do it is if Bryce structures the deal in a way that benefits the Nationals, a lot like the Max Scherzer deal, which is a lot of money deferred. That's the only way I can see it happening. But if it's 10 for 350, it's going to have to be like a Bobby Bonilla deferment, because the Nationals, they're not going to pay him $35 million a year. I can't imagine that they do. I love the guy. I want him to stay, but he's just not worth that. He isn't. Anthony Rendon, according to F-War, Fangraphs War, has been the most valuable player in the National League the last 2 years. And he's not worth $35 million a year. So I can't. And he's more valuable to me than Bryce Harper is.
There are very few people that are worth $35 million a year. I didn't think Giancarlo Stanton was worth.
Now he's making, what, 28? Something like that. It was 13 over 3, or 330 over 13. So yeah, I think it's 28.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's still not worth.
No.
He's still not worth that.
I think there's only one position player who's worth whatever Trout's worth. He sets the market.
Sure.
It's hard to say that Max Scherzer's not worth $30 million a year. It's hard to say that.
Can we get through a podcast without Max Scherzer?
No, somewhere. I love the guy. You know what's weird? Max Scherzer is like 3 weeks younger than me. And I don't idolize him because we're the same age, but man, he's amazing to watch. It's like watching Pedro in his heyday to me. He's amazing to watch.
I don't have the luxury.
No.
Of, you know, the way the Orioles starters are. And in fact, you know what I was thinking about? And I promise this is the last time I bring up the Redskins. But when we were talking about Alex Smith earlier and how, you know, he's just all right. You know what I thought a lot about? How I could equate his performances for the season is when you look at an Orioles starter, especially from last season, and they went 5 innings and maybe only gave up 4 runs, you're like, man, that was pretty good. Like, that's how, that's the measure.
Then you see Max Scherzer go 7, and he gives up a run, strikes out 11.
Right.
And you're like, that must
and
be
I
nice.
Get the text from you, and I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah. I'm like, he only went 7 tonight. I really thought he'd go 8. Yeah, like, go fuck yourself. Anyway, I think it's a good way to end it, man. We'll wrap this up. Anyway, do you have any final thoughts? Anything that you would have been, other than the Dachshund thing?
Well, maybe if we could just go over
a
couple predictions for this weekend. This coming weekend, Redskins.
Oh, God. I got to be honest. I think they probably lose. I think it'll be a low-scoring game, relatively low-scoring. I think they probably lose like 21-16, somewhere in that neighborhood. You?
I think we lose again. I think it's 31-17.
Think the defense gives up 31?
Yeah, I do.
That's the thing. The defense is completely healthy.
Well, they were healthy.
they were healthy this week. Yeah, they were healthy this week. No, I think the defense will have a rebound. I don't think the offense can score enough to keep them in a game. Like I said earlier, unless this defense turns into the 2000 Ravens or the 85 Bears, we're in trouble.
I'm anxious to see the results here. So next week on your podcast, maybe.
I like that 31-17. It sounds. I mean, I said 21-16. I have more faith in the defense still. I don't. I think we were probably overestimated them after the Giants game, but I think we may be beating them up a little bit too much, having faced one of the best receiving corps in all of football this past weekend, and the Falcons coming off of a bye, and the Redskins offense not doing enough to keep the Falcons offense off the field.
And just one last update, and for you listeners out there who have followed along each week, just want to remind everybody that Nate's playoff-bound pick of Cleveland did lose again for the fourth time.
But they lost to Kansas City. I mean, right, everybody loses to Kansas City. The game was relatively close considering it was Kansas City.
Listen, if they win out, they're 10-6.
Well, 10-6, what is it, 9-6-1, right?
Oh, yeah, 9-6-1.
That's fine.
There's still a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance. Final reminder, we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. That is DMVSportsNetwork.com. Follow them on Twitter at DMV_SN. Again, they have 7 podcasts. They release 1 a day. We are affiliated with them, so they blast our stuff. We blast theirs. Again, Marcus Hemingway, Fantasy Fever. I'm a big fan of his podcast. I might just turn over my roster decisions to him. So feel free to reach out to them on Twitter at DMV_SN. I'd like to thank Matt again for sitting in. Josh should be back next week. He's been on a wonderful vacation. I'm not going to say where, but he's been on a wonderful vacation with his wife. He should be back. And let me tell you, if the Redskins lose again, probably some fireworks coming from Josh. He is significantly saltier than I am. But Matt, man, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you sitting in.
Yeah, my pleasure. Had a great time.
And we will see Matt again. We will talk to you guys soon. Thanks for listening again. Follow us on Twitter. It's About Time DC1. That's ITS About Time DC1. Subscribe. Rate us. Do all the things. Blast us out to your friends. Whatever you want to do. We're trying to grow this thing, and we appreciate every one of you that listens. So thank you. Matt, have a good week.
Thanks, you too. We'll see you guys.
Take it easy.